Now, this is on the new machine. I just want to check now on the new machine to see what it sounds like when it's taking this same sound down. I'm in the kitchen, I see, talking in the kitchen, and I just want to see how it's going to pick up on that other machine and here from the kitchen and using another line. See, I use another line. I use another line. Now I've turned both the machines on. I want to see how they both work. They're both tuned in right now with their old cords, and I'll see how they both work. It's all the same thing here in the kitchen, and I just want to see how the machines work.
Who in the world's up so early?
Well, is that yearling cat of mine had me up since 6 o'clock?
I thought maybe that is your motorcycle you was.
Well, they sound about the same.
Coming up in.
That's that old piece of junk that I married. It's worse than a marriage.
When did you marry that?
69 or something like that. I keep saying that it's worth fixing. Certainly must think so, because it needs fixing all the time. Oh, I've just had more coffee than I probably need this morning.
Let me tell you about before you start. I was just on it myself. I'll show you how this works a little bit. I've been working on Mr. Neeland.
You know Louis.
You know who he is.
Not familiar.
Well, he's my old standby. He was the extension forester for a long time. You know generally who he is, don't you? Well, he made one of the finest tapes we ever had. Back in February. And I thought it was in pretty good shape. I never paid attention to it. Rick worked it up and transcribed a good bit of it, most of it, and made some comments on it. And you had that.
That's
one.
That's the Pete.
Yes, yeah. That's one you had.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now this is what happened. We were going to get. I got into it, and I saw what Rick had. He even had it on the page, and he had it so full, and he had so many. Errors in it that you couldn't see what was in the tape, even from his transcription. So I started to rework it. I got into it. Well, let me tell you what I found. What I found was that he hadn't got into the stuff and made anything of it. And I knew these two or three high points in it, like what he sees in the Sierras when he's logging up there, and then in the Navy when the captain gets him for profanity. Now, they were high points. That's something to work towards. Well, I got into it just to see how the thing held together. Now, this is where it works. Now, you say it's all in the tape, and you got it, and just go ahead and use it. Well, it's not. You got to work the tape up before you can use it. What I found was to start with, he came up on that blustery day, And that car catches the light.
Oh yeah, those are painful when you do that.
Yeah, they all, mine does it too.
Yeah.
The first part of it, we have trouble holding him to the subject. And I pick up any little clues. He names it, it's the West. But we pick up all those little clues, like oatmeal. And that lasts for half an hour. And then Rick goes with him to pull his car out of the ditch. He comes back in, and he walks in there, and he's got something. He reaches in his pocket and got something. He says, "Dr. Miles, I have brought you something." And what it is annual report. That's what he wanted to talk about all the time, and we were stifling that and getting into the West. Well, every now and then he'd take off in his own direction, but we stuck with that West. And he got that long narrative about logging in the Sierras, and then that beautiful narrative about World War I, when he, that's 10 years later. In the Navy. Now, I didn't work up any more of it at first. But now that was working it up. And it was in August. When we talked to him again and were trying to get his stuff ready to printable, get in shape, that I saw at the end this little, what looked like a considerable section on the
on the cottonwood tree, but it turned out not to be on the cottonwood tree. You want me to move that car?
It turned out to be what I call politics. That is, he talks about how uneducated he is and all like that.
That's a nice shade you got. That's a fine shade.
Yeah. That's what he talks about. But it turned out to be a fine section. And represented that side was sinking, and that's a pretty big side now. Well, we use that in this way. You see, he has a lot of that remarkable experience, but you can't get to it because of this county agent mentality. He's going to do something good, you see. He's always got a program to push. The Red Cedar, or a post, all like that, so that he goes out in the countryside and he don't see the people. He's pushing a program.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the preachers do. They don't see the people. They're pushing a program. And if you don't watch out, you see Wayne. What I've seen is that I never saw the students that I worked with up there because I was pushing too many programs. And there's only one or two courses I ever taught where I had any idea at all what was going on. All right. Now in August, he came out on Tuesday on his own with an arm full of documents for us to use. And we held him here for a couple of hours and talked. Now that's the most sustained talk, and it's even talk. And we don't have to work with him then. He stays in the West. And what he does, you get a glimpse of him working in the hay. He said the hay was the hardest work he ever did. Well, we get him. We got enough leisure. He goes into that. But it's all a process. Then we go way past this water wall where they dried them up, he called it. The dredges came in, you see, and took the water, and there were 15 or 20 farmers along there with beautiful orchards, and they just dried up out in California. So they had to leave. And we got into his stepfather. His father died when he was 6 years old. Now his stepfather is something. He is something. He had lung trouble and he had to go to a good climate, and he went out there and sort of homesteaded, didn't know a thing about farming. And he got these beautiful orchards. They had peaches, and he had a vineyard, and he was an expert at making wine. He started out in the old country as a clockmaker, and what I find out is that Mr. Nealon, the only thing he ever spoke at home, as long as his parents was there, was German. He brought up in the German language, and he talked it right here.
I'll be damned. You wouldn't have known that, would you?
Never known anything about it. Well, now other things come out. But the high point of it is, he and his brothers studied wildlife. Well, I've seen enough to know that young people don't study anything. And he said that's all they had to do. Well, that still don't account for it. Now, he got into the Navy because his brother, oldest brother, bought a book, Abbott's History of the American Navy. So, that was their reading matter. And he sat here and told me incident after incident from Abbott's History of the American Navy. He just soaked them up, you see, when he was a child, when he was growing up. And that's how I come him to get into the Navy. And it is a remarkable thing. And that naval experience thing is, he won't be an officer, a 60-day wonder. He won't be one of them. He wants to go into it and see what the Navy is like. And he does that when he's in his upper 20s when he does that. So that's strong in him, Wade. Strong in him.
As after
he took his 2-year course over here and was farm foreman. He was head of the farm over here for 3 or 4 years.
And you refused to go through that OCS, whatever the hell it is?
No, he took military training over there and paid $60 for uniform. And he didn't have $60. So, then World War One came on, and he went into that in the Navy, and he's the only one of them that saw action. And all that that happened to him happened on a battleship. And what he related was up in the North Atlantic amongst the icebergs. Now, this wildlife stuff, he's lived out of doors all his life. He's an outdoor man. For 20 years, before he retired over there, he was the extension forester. But he didn't have a desk. And as he told me at the end of it, when I was riding him, about a 3-year stint that he and Russell, somebody had, who was a young fellow who had a doctor's, they went all over the state of Florida, digging a hole in every section of land in the state of Florida and making a soil map. And I said, Mr. Nealon, it's so ambitious, it's ridiculous. And he took the defense, and he says he believed in doing things. And if people asked him to do something, he'd do it, or else you'd see him trying. And at the end of that, he said, all his life, for 50 years, he said, that's in 1920, for 50 years, he said, nobody had told him what to do. Nobody had overlooked what he did. And so far as he knew, nobody even knew what he did. Now, I won't go into it any further. But you see, you've got all the material there, and you think you've got it in your mind, and you know what he said, but you don't. You got to work it up. Now you say, how do you work it up? I can't say. I don't know how to work it up. All I got to do, I can't teach people how to ride and sit on the ground. I can't stand on the ground and know what the horse is doing. I can't. Well, I can't sit out there and tell people how to work up a tape or talk or anything. I just got to get in there and sort of get the feel of it myself. But the one thing about it, if you use a tape, unless you go, you say, well, I'll go listen to that tape and I'll use it. But that ain't worth a damn. It ain't worth a tinker's damn. You've got to get into the tape and use it. Just use it and use it and use it. And by that time, you'll see something in it, and you can go ahead and use it for some other purpose. Now, you see, I've got that kneeling stuff worked up to the point where Debbie or anybody can read what I see and use what I see. But they're not working with Mr. Kneeling. They're just working through me, second hand. They're just taking second hand. But that step is in there, and that's a terrific step. I spent 2 solid weeks trying to make something of that first part. 2 solid weeks, and I sweat and cussed. Hell, I can't work and be just quiet about it, you see. I'm like a jaybird. I got to make noises.
Maybe I'll have to lend you that damn cat of mine, because he'll get right in there with you. He'll respond. Well, all you gotta do is say, ring, he's meow! If he's sound asleep, he'll jump up and meow.
He'd rather be on your knee.
Yeah.
He'd stop on the table.
If I had a cat I ever had was the first one, and you heard the old statement of cuss the cat, I mean, it's an old statement. I never really knew what it meant until I had this cat, and I had him so I could turn around and I'd say, God damn, and he'd hit the floor. He'd go flat out like that. I could be saying it to anybody. And I'd say, God damn, and look around, that cat was stretched out on the floor, you know. It was so fine to have an animal like that, and you could cuss him, and he'd squat lower every time you bowed he'd get. Finally, he'd be squashed on the floor. Just cuss him out, man.
He was preparing for what was to come.
Yeah, I think that's, you start talking about cussing at your work in there. You talking about, I don't know, something hit me. I'm still thinking about that Harper's thing that I read and couldn't relate too well to you.
Yeah.
But what a counterpoint to what you just went through. What an absolute counterpoint. I mean, with Mr. Kneeling and his approach to life. And this man openly made his own personal statements. It's not good talk, the Ellsberg man. And he makes his life is the precise opposite, Mr. Kneeling. He was always told what to do, and furthermore, he found out that it didn't benefit him to do anything that he wanted to do. To do what everybody else wanted him to do got him to the top.
Yeah.
Oh, and really? He found that out early in life.
Oh.
And he still believes it.
Yeah. Oh, do you know?
Yes, sir. I mean, it's just so, I mean, that's the other end of it.
The other side of it.
Yeah. What he does is very clear, see, and that's the difficulty with Mr. Kneeling. I mean, that's not precise and clear. This guy is. I mean, that's part and parcel of it, I assume.
Yeah.
You know, a highly ordered and structured existence.
Yes.
But that's a big volume inside of Mr. Kneeling, and what's going on there. Large space. It's not precise. That's the trouble with it, I think. And trying to get something out of it. I don't know, but I think I got Beverly to read this paper. I was trying to get some reading on it somewhere, and I asked her this morning before she left for work. She says, "Did you read it?" She says, "Yeah, read it." Said, "Liked the last half of it, all right. It didn't make too much sense out of the first half." And I pretty well knew what I put down there. And Beverly knows what I'm into, but the last half, I don't think could exist without the first half. And that's, you know, the first half started rambling.
Yeah.
And I remember one time I started writing something, I said, "Well, I'll be damned, I'm getting a little bit precise here." That was where the last half must have begun with her.
Yeah.
You know, I was looking at that and I was saying, "Well, now, wait a minute. You know, I'm just getting too precise to hold to the point."
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work that way.
Well.
But that's what the public wants.
Yes,
decision.
They want it just all served up for them. All the goodies right straight out there. I've got so I won't write. And any of this stuff I do out here, I won't write the straightforward statements about what I learned. I won't do it. I keep it within the process. I keep the process going, the process by which I learned it, and that kills them.
Mm-hmm.
And it can just kill them all they want to. I'm not going to just set it down out there where they can use these little generalities that I make and act as if they know everything that went on. I'm not going to reduce it to that.
See, the damn thing starts off about that first came to my attention while we were walking down the lane. Paper on economics, you might say, or my exploration of economics. Well, that's no way to write about economics. But, and it's still, I get lost in it myself. And I go back and look at it, and I see some points that come out while I'm working, you know, some good things to hold on to.
Yeah.
And it's a process. You know, that's what I found out just from this one effort, you know, one small, minute effort.
Well, I've got another little addition on it myself. It's nice to, we'll just keep it going a little bit.
Yeah, that, I don't know, I was picking up on the dealers there in McIntosh that you spoke about and things like that. And it's an interesting thing. My big person was Jake in town, the black man.
Uh-huh.
And I went back and talked to him again, and he was lying down, they had his head under a car, and working away, and see Phil, his boss, is back. And his boss has had some fine experiences with the jail. Can't talk about him. I mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went out to Jake, and he's down there, and I said something about, "Jake, about when was it you left the farm?" And he said, "Oh, it was about, it was 23 or 28. And I think I said one more thing, and he turned around and got out from under that car and set up and started into talking. But he said that people, I asked him, did a lot of money change hands in those days? He said, no, we didn't have any need for money. He said, hell, if you had $5 or $6, you wouldn't know what to do with it. You couldn't spend it. He said, even Phil couldn't drink up a dollar's worth of beer.
Yeah.
And he can drink an awful lot, Phil can.
Yeah.
He'd be hard put to drink up a dollar's worth of beer. And that was the end of, that was the world. that they live close to. And my thesis is coming out is that the man started looking at his existence through the dollar rather than directly. It's become a filter that separated him from his existence. In other words, they're living second-handed through the dollar bill. And it's part of the crepe mill, has a great deal to do with it, punching in, punching out, regularity of life, things like that. It's the dollar viewpoint that's changed. It's not the fact that the dollar was never around. Hell, it's always been here.
Yeah.
It's the way to begin to use it.
Yeah.
In that exchange media.
Now, he's not at the crepe mill.
Oh, no. Jake
he's
works in town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the crepe mill has been a part of me for a long time. I never did give you that little piece I wrote about 68. But the crepe mill, you know, has punctuated this world. It's organized it.
Mm-hmm.
Damn whistle. 6 o'clock, they make a statement. 6:30, they make another statement. 7:30, they make that statement. In 5 minutes to 8, they give a solid statement. In 8 o'clock, they give it a little whoop. It's like, well, everybody's here, and if you're not here, you've had it. The 8 o'clock whistle goes whoop. It's just a little one. You know, just sort of sets it off there. Highly ordered.
That's what Thoreau noticed about the about the railroad. It put order into the countryside.
Just yeah, set your clock. Yeah, that's the same thing. It really is. I'll be damned, I'll bring that little piece over. I've always been fond of it. I don't know what value it is. It's just a paragraph about Miss Anna dying. Sort of struck me right strong. And I don't know. Them damn railroad tracks got in there, too. I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got in there.
Well...
I mean, it's an emotional piece that doesn't have a damn thing to do with talk or anything like that. Just an emotional piece.
When I think of Miss Anna, I think that she saw the world through the family. And then I think, well, she saw it above the family. But all the time she was looking at this big world of hers, you might say she was up there sort of holding herself up where she could just look out, you see. She was so immersed in the family all her life, even when she was 95. It was family, and she still could survive. I don't know what it is.
Well, Harriet Butch Woods got that as good as he's got hair on his head.
Yeah.
I told you, he said that here's one kid's bedroom and there's the other kid's bedroom.
Well, we were talking, we'd gone from this, I think we'd started out from that library paper.
Yeah.
That thing I did, you see, you can see that that's the end of the library affair. And I kind of forget the connections, but what's constant in my mind, always has been now for all this time, is who's gonna work with me. You see, and they change. And now, it would just kill me to go backwards. I'd get them younger with less experience. I need them to have more experience with that typewriter gift.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and that's how we. And I just merely proposed if I could just get someone who's already in touch with the countryside, wouldn't that be something? It's not altogether in touch with the countryside, Wade, but it's with the ability to just walk up to somebody and make contact. I don't mean speak, I mean make contact. And I don't think that's available. I don't know. I think that's what we worked out here. I mean, I don't think anybody else thinks in those terms. I don't think that distinction exists in their minds. It never did with me.
That's a whenever I speak about this thing, you can see that cloud. Well, hell, people won't sit down long enough to let you get through with it, to understand that there is a distinction. They're always putting it in some other world.
Yeah.
And they say, oh yeah, right, you know, I know this. And immediately you can see they're off base. Mm-hmm. They hadn't stood still long enough. They got to have some requirement to stand still long enough. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And that's precisely what making contact is, guy.
Well?
That's it. It's part of the same game.
Now, somebody walks up there and talks to Buster and sees him carrying on like that. You see, they say, oh, yeah, I know Buster Mountain. But they don't. And like that time we came through that back street there at the mill, we saw old
Jack
Sanders. You see, he was gardening, and then he showed us the house and then his plantation. And he'd say, well, I know all about Jack, you see, but all that's just external. You haven't actually made contact with his mind. But, you see, that would be out of question. So I have to go back to this old thing, you see, of just getting someone with a background whose mind works and who has that facility with the language to start with, and the rest of it has to be exposure. Now there's one little part there I ought to be able to get, and that's I ought to be able to find somebody who has a sense of form, artistic sense, and I've never had anyone who has that. Debbie doesn't have that anymore than any of the others. She's a great reader. She's a much better reader than any of the others, but she still doesn't have that sense. And in order to handle the material, you got to have a little sense of form. But anyhow, we were talking about making contact with somebody who knew this country, and you brought Butch and lined him out, and I thought that's first rate. Now, Butch has that feeling. He's just a natural.
Mm-hmm.
I'm priming you now. And you've heard him talk any number of times. And he always comes through.
Getting weaker, though. He was down just the day we spoke. That afternoon he came down.
Oh,
first
really?
Time I seen him in a long time.
Oh, really?
Sort of like his mind is that... that feeling, that spirit is shrinking in proportion to the size of his girth.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And the advent of his house and things like that.
Yeah.
I feel that when he gets back on the land, see, the apartment is killing him.
Oh, yeah. That's his first experience.
Oh, yes. And he's been there almost 2 years, I reckon,
yeah.
In the apartment in the town, and it's shrinking him bad, his head. And I feel it. His 13 acres, that's land. That's enough land to be land, see?
Yeah.
And plus, that for a while, anyhow, the roads will be somewhat the same. It won't be too many more years, and that place over there is going to be all populated. But anyhow, he's got that 13 acres, and he's got his ordered life. He's got the wife that probably he probably wants that distance. She can never connect with him. I would think. Then he can be with his land and have his family world in order. So she won't interfere because she's too separated.
She'll live her own life.
not so much that, it's that she is... She can't contact anybody, and furthermore, if she does touch anybody, she'll cut them off immediately. She won't allow them to live, and that pushes him out of her existence. And I imagine that that one thing would be a salvation, if anything, for him. He may pick back up in the spirit somewhat, but if he stays up there in the apartment working on the university, it certainly won't stay alive. He won't be able to get into anything. See, when he comes visiting me, you talk about kids and things like that. When he comes down, he's always subject to Sissy. And sure enough, here she'll come, you know, all 200 and something pounds of her, roaring in the door saying, "Well, Harry, we gotta go eat." That's the evening woman. She'll sit there with a table full of food this big, stuffed to the gills, planning the next meal. It invariably happens. That's where she's at.
Where do you find her?
Down at our place. She's our friend.
Where'd you find her?
Norman Jensen, taught at Santa Fe, and she taught at Santa Fe, and they sort of got together as friends, see?
Oh, yes.
And
she came out with him.
Yeah, and then they carried on for about a year, but Norman's not basically fond of women, see? She wouldn't let that through her head. She had Norman, and she was going to lay on to him. Norman almost, he almost had to die, move away, to terminate it. It was terrible. He was exasperated because he's not a strong person in that sense, you know, to just say go to hell. But anyhow, that's how she got down there. She got to be friends with us, and after Norman finally excused himself permanently, she was still hanging around our place. And old Harry came along, and they just got together. She's a little bit older than he is, too. You see, she's making good money, $12,000-$14,000, something like that, a master's degree. Highly respected. Goes to all the functions at school, you know, with the president. Has lawn parties with the department place for the school people. We attended one of those.
She's a little older, and she's big.
Lord, she's big.
And Butch has been just like a sapling, has been.
Yeah, he was. He's he's getting a little paunchy.
Feeling out a little now.
Yeah. It'd be hard. I don't know how you could avoid it if you lived with that woman. But if she goes on a solid diet, I'd gain 50 pounds on her diet, see? That's her diet.
Well.
She talks about losing weight. Diet, hell, she just eats too much. That's all it is to it, forever and ever eating.
Well,
I don't know what it is with people like that.
Bush goes home, and all that other is without effort. So he has it made. He just can't turn that down, Wade.
Lord, it was answer to some far-fetched prayer of his. I don't know, down the line somewhere. It's orderly.
Orderly and plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, he was the one over here. He was the ugly duckling. He didn't learn. And he's slowpoke. They all liked him. And the one least liable to succeed.
Least likely to succeed. That's right.
So he can't turn his back on success, can he?
No, he... Well... One of the stipulations about that ownership of that 13 acres was that he be married.
Oh, really?
That's right.
Where did he get it from?
Inherited it from his father, his family, mother, grandmother, somebody down the line. They owned it. And it was an ongoing will of some sort that as soon as he was married, he'd get his home site, which was those 13 acres. It still goes on, I reckon.
Yeah.
It sure went on at this one instance, that's for sure. See, Ash doesn't have any sensibility of land that I can determine from what little I've been exposed to him.
No feel for it at all?
Oh, no.
He likes that old house.
Well, I'll tell you, if he likes that old house, it might be some old feeling, but there's a lot of new feeling in it. Like a lot of my friends love antiques. But they just learned to love antiques.
Yeah.
And they love them from a new standpoint. A new respect. It's an acquired taste. It's not a heritage with them. Not a feeling of the past.
Yeah.
This is really something that... it's a barter.
But
it's a consumer attitude. Precisely a consumer attitude.
Oh.
Glossed over. And I'd be willing to bet you that 90% of his affection for that house is that consumer attitude.
And he'd never be able to see that by himself.
Oh, he's got that willowy wife, see, and he's got fine cars. He drove 240Z sports car for a long time. Now he's got an extra fine Volvo. And
through his wife?
No, he evidently makes money, but the two of them, I assume, work. I don't know a lot about them, but I just pick up this thing in the distance compared to that crazy family. There's that Ash, you know, an old Freddie, who's about the last of the real land people that I can observe at a distance, because he's young, but he's got emotion that's 40 years ago.
Yes.
You know. An attitude, an action, and emotion. He's not living in this world.
I think he decides his best not to.
Well, whatever his choice, because he's got a pickup that's got the throttle stuck at 36 miles an hour, or some speed like that. You know, that's wherever he goes, he'll travel at that speed. On the highway, on a dirt road, anywhere else, he just plugs it in. Butch told me that. That's his pace. And I've seen him work a little bit. And Butch says that he's got a good capacity for getting mad and upset. But most of the time, he just flows along.
He got a lot to worry with, to upset him. I imagine if the world was like it was 40 years ago, he wouldn't have much trouble. He can't get far to help him.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, you live in... That would double up bad if you've got that attitude for 40 years ago and living in this world.
That's right, yeah.
He probably... See, time is one of my things that bothers my head. And this has happened so fast here in the last few years.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these people around here still think of their land is worth $40 or $60 an acre.
Yeah.
Whether somebody's told them it's worth more or not, doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
Yeah.
They still think in those terms. Or even when they homesteaded it or something like that, or picked it up for taxes. Well, you know that older generation thing we were talking about, the kids and the older people? Well, the old man down here, his wife died and he lives in that little greenhouse, I think, right on the park in Evanston.
Yeah.
He started dating this gal in McIntosh, right after his wife died, and the people around Edison got a little upset. Didn't let her get cold enough. Well, he's considering marrying her and wants to sell that house. Well, Beverly was interested, and it's been going on for 6 months or so. And he's got 2 acres of ground, and that house wouldn't be as big as the bottom part of this house, I feel sure. I haven't looked into it. Okay,
yeah.
It's not big, is it?
No.
It doesn't have elegance.
No.
It's just a house.
Just a house. It was built when they was poor.
Okay, you know what he wanted for it? He called her up yesterday, the day before, and says, I'm ready to sell. She just says, oh, that's fine. How much you want for it? $30,000. He said without a quibble.
Yeah. Out of 2 acres.
$30,000.
Yeah.
Woo!
Well, you can't start bargaining at that point.
I said, I don't know. I mean, he picked up that mentality of what's going on in the world somewhere from somebody, maybe his girlfriend. And
so he just moved down there with his girlfriend.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, $1,000 just about to see him out.
Maybe that's the way he's calculating it.
He's my age.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
I thought he was a little older.
He could be just a year or two.
Oh, I thought he was, well, you know, getting on up closer to 80s, what a feeling I had.
I don't think so.
Well, that doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
But I'd be, maybe you...
In 70s or something like that.
Maybe I better...
That was just a point of interest to me, talking about all this money and Freddie Wood. And see, Butch is building a house. Well, they're putting $30,000 into their house on the hill over there. Not even real brick veneer, but goddamn plastic brick veneer are they putting on that house.
Just the way people, just the way the people dress up the old houses.
Mm-hmm.
There's some that you can tack on.
Tacking it on.
Miss Mary's house, have you seen it?
Yes.
Oh, she brought it out and showed it to you, didn't she?
Yeah. It's there, yeah. Her house is fine, acceptable to me, you know. But Butch getting over there and doing that thing. See, that's another whole mentality, and we discussed about, well, is it Sissy or is it Butch acting like this?
Yeah.
Well, you can't really separate them out now.
No, not.
Because Butch needs, you brought it up. Hell, he's a black sheep, least likely to succeed.
Yeah.
Well, now he's going to have a house that looks just like the Richardson's house.
Yeah.
Which I look at as the biggest abortion around here anyhow. Those Richardson boys and those new houses they put up.
Yeah.
Hey, they don't belong to this side of the land.
No.
They don't belong anywhere, but if they're going to be anywhere, they need to cart them off into town.
That's what they ought to have done, just live in town and commute it out here.
Those fools put up that house. It's so obvious. It's got one kind of front here, but you can see the false side over here as you drive by it.
Yeah. I don't go anymore along that. I just don't want to look at it.
Yeah, they even floodlight it at night.
They always floodlight it so much.
Like an airport.
Yeah.
Now, what do you reckon drags those people back out here with that mentality?
I don't know.
At least Ben Franklin went on in and lived in the golf course.
Yeah.
He didn't mess around out here.
That house, and it's you know, it'd be hard to build a house now that make you feel at home the old way. You see, you lucked into this old store over here.
Mm-hmm.
That'll keep you straight. You can't it costs you so much to camouflage that, it wouldn't be worth it. And see, this old house here keeps me straight.
Yeah.
It's, I feel awfully uncomfortable anywhere else now. But now, Butcher's house inside, it'll be just like it was right there in the heart of town.
The apartment?
Just like an apartment.
Exactly like the place they left.
Yeah.
They're complaining bitterly about it.
Yeah. They have no artistic sense. Oh, that sense of art is something. Unless you see that culture protects them, Wade. And you see, in Miss Anna's time, the culture protected them, you see. And all the carpenters were geared to what they could want. And I see the carpenters all go towards stopping up the windows, don't they?
Well, it just occurred to me, I don't know why in the hell it is, but when the people build out in the country, they don't put any windows in the house. They build in town, they'll pay $5,000 for a plate glass window.
Yeah.
Be damned if they don't do that.
You mean they really pay for them?
Oh, good Lord. And then they pay another $10,000 for drapes to keep them covered on. They come out here to the country, and they forget to put windows in the house because they're scared, I reckon, or something crazy.
Well, it's just that carryover with the architects, you see. They are building a house for air conditioning.
Yeah, that's right.
If they got windows, it's just a little slit where you can't see through them. I'm telling you, I'm a good one to tell you.
Yes, that something happened when those... When that culture shifted, I'm not crying for the old culture. I'm not a country person. I'm crying for the values that were lost.
Yeah.
And what Jake brought out to me was that as long as anybody in the neighborhood was up and about, you were likely to be up and about.
Yeah.
And when that tractor came down the pike, it shifted gears. That's when the old grandfather told Jake he'd better learn to hustle.
Oh, really?
Because he said, I ain't had to worry about nothing. I don't need nothing. But it's not going to be the same for you.
Oh, really? Is that right?
I put it first down in my paper that he said you better learn how to hustle. I went back and asked Jake, and it changed into you better get yourself an education. Jake got an education. Yes, sir. Hell, he was making $200 a week running shine when he was in the 20s.
Oh, really?
And,
really?
He can still, if he's hard, see, he does honest labor now. He's 60, he's rolling on towards 70, and he's not physically really strong. He's got leg trouble or something. He's out there doing nigger work on the cars, keeping the family together. But if somebody pushes him real hard, he can still get out and hustle.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. He'll do it. He still hustles on the side one way or the other about something, because they lead a pretty good life, and he's got to make less than $100 a week with Phil. But the grandfather told him in the 20s
he'd better get an education.
He'd better do something, because that world was gone. There's no way that world was going to exist any longer. He didn't know. He couldn't explain. He couldn't talk to me about how the grandfather might know. I just sort of asked him, how you reckon your grandfather knew that?
Well, you have to lead into those things. You can't ask a question. A question, you see, that they can't handle. You just go all around and around and lead him into various things. Your granddaddy, he made money, and one thing another.
His granddaddy.
And first thing, no, you see, you enable him to get a lead. That's what I found.
Yeah.
What comes out on Miss Nealon's tape. The thing I want to know, I wouldn't accept it from my experience, that just boys all by themselves, even out in the California in 1910 earlier, would be interested in wildlife. I knew better than that.
Mm-hmm.
They might be interested in hunting, but that's not wildlife.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, that was my cue. But I knew he didn't know how he happened to get interested in wildlife, because he gave the wrong reasons. Now, one thing that he did, his interest in wildlife, he was interested in they decided they would get a clutch of eggs from ever nesting bird out there. Well, I can understand that, because that's a lowly objective. It's classification. That's about as low as you can get, you see. But he puts that, Mr. Nealon puts that up along with the other. That is actually looking at the wildlife. It's one thing to shoot them and kill them and classify them. That comes pretty easy. But to look at the habits is wholly different. And how much he looked at the habits, I haven't found out at that time. But I could find out of them. You see, because up until he became a county agent, his mind worked. After he became county agent, I don't have any information from him at all.
And isn't that something?
He was state forester for 20 years and worked with the county agents and all the 4-H organizations, and I don't get anything from him.
Yeah.
It is wholly unacceptable.
Well, that's another offshoot that's one of the strongest thing, that institution. It just, your inquiries really is bringing out what the damned institution is doing. I'm working on this, on the money thing, on economics, on a little soft pedal way. As an offshoot, it's hard not to get involved with the institution when you begin thinking about it. You sort of keep your mind narrowed down. I consider the crate mill as an institution.
Sure.
And it's Beverly said.
Something else. You talk about an institution and an institution regulating the whole countryside. Why, the bar, B.D. Rogers Bar up here, the restaurant and bar.
Mm-hmm.
You see, that's had a tremendous influence all around here. For one thing, it provided up until now, since Rogers left, the new people don't do it. But you see, Rogers made James Sawyer available to the whole countryside. And what he did most of all was run errands for you. The first person to help me when I came down here, he hauled something for me. And I started to pay him. Why, the last thing he wanted was pay. He'd get it back in kind, you see, and get it back so much more, it'd be multiplying. But see, he was available. He got wood for all these old people, took them all to get their stamps. He got so now he's not honest, but he used to be honest about that. And you see, just that one contribution. And then he had all the cooks. He had a half a dozen cooks. And from the countryside. And that established them. They didn't make much, but they were established over there. And you see, old Jim Means even depended on him. After Jim Means cut off everybody else, wouldn't talk to him, he still talked to B and go over there and read B's paper. Jim Means doesn't drink. He went to the bar, but he didn't go over to get whiskey. He went over to get cigars and read the paper and talk a few minutes to Beatty. So it's phenomenal, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's small compared to the mill. Now, forget where you were. I interrupted you. You were saying.
No, it was just that. The mill. It's that thing. No, I just washed by. I was just talking about institutions.
Yes.
And how there's somewhere the man really got a need for this institution thing, and it changed. It definitely changed people. Beverly said yesterday or something, she says, hell, I said, my life's been so, I was mentioning the fact that I need to get a watch band. Because I had no idea what time it was anymore since I broke my watch band, and I have need to know what time it is once in a while, being in the business world. She was commenting about, well, I think that's a good thing. You don't have a watch. Says that my life's been so ordered recently that I hadn't even had time to think.
Yeah.
See, she's head nurse, and she's got to schedule herself from 6 o'clock in the morning until 4:30 or 5, and then she's got some orders to do with the children at least for 2 hours. And her life's wiped out. And being head nurse is not her first, foremost, favorite thing. It doesn't allow her to, it's not fitting with her, see. Therefore, life is consumed, and most people live in that existence.
Yeah.
It's just like me trying to live in the world of photography. Why, I would be completely torn up if I got into that thing solid. Because I don't, the business photography world, see. It just doesn't satisfy me. It doesn't fit me at all. I couldn't exist. I'd be, whoa, I don't know, cancer or something would get me pretty quick. Couldn't handle it.
Yes, so much of it.
Yeah, and most people see it, hell.
Come to
weekend is all the time they got, and You can't produce anything when your head at the weekend's all the time you got.
Yeah.
See, barely can't carry a bone to work. See, I can't carry a bone to that photographic job. If I carry a bone with me, there's a lot of things will get left undone.
Yeah.
It nags at you all the time. Nags at you. You can't sit around and figure out something. In these business propositions, I think some business is tending now towards the point that men own up to the fact that it's not necessary for them to spend 80 hours a week. It's not just a necessary social virtue any longer. The younger businessmen, and hell, they take off on Thursday and go fishing. It's not just a business game of golf. They goof off.
It's golf without the business.
Right.
Is that there?
Yes, they'll own up to it. And they think it's righteous now. One of their business compatriots takes off to go play up to somewhere or does something like that. They don't condemn them. See, it was, if you're a businessman and you played during a business week,
yeah,
you were not respected.
Yeah.
So that world is shifting a little bit.
Considerably, I guess.
If you produce.
But even so, Wade, they've got enough tied up that they still can't be too chancy.
Oh, no. No. No, they had
so much is at stake, and their personality can't change too much.
No, God, they're not in line for salvation. They wouldn't give all they had to the poor.
No.
See, and they don't want any part of that.
No.
They'll fight for that place they've gotten.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate part.
You see, when Don comes down here, I don't meddle with him. His personality just fits up there, and he can make $50,000 to $75,000 a year, and just offhand.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, if you don't want to meddle with a man like that, I mean, it's you see, he'd be the head of the family for a long time to come. You gotta produce in order to be the head of a family. I don't mean just his family, but I mean he'll be the head of a big family.
Yeah.
But he can't play around with his reactions to things.
Well, Bill Schaaf gave a good. It's too bad he's not a better reporter, because he's bummed around the country here. He has that desire to go. It's waning now. He needs to sit down somewhere. But you could see it in him. It's happened over the last 4 or 5 years. He'll sit down for 6 months, and then he'll start cranking up, and he'll go.
Yeah.
He's not going anywhere. He's just going.
Yeah.
He'll find some minor excuse
to
never get there. To that minor excuse, but anyhow, this other couple from Micanopy that left about the same time he did went up to do something, and they failed at their objective. Well, the girl has rich parents, and she is a lush woman. She's all one would ever want as far as female is concerned, but there it stops. Well, we got talking about it, and he got talking about her family being rich. And he went up, and they went to stay with the family. See, the old man was, vice president of Procter & Gamble or something like that, see. So they went to went to stay with Bill Schaaf, went to visit this Gaines and Kathleen, is the names. And what little reporting he did on that old man, because he was old, he was completely gone at 60 years. And Bill even commented on that. He says, 60 years is not old, but he was an old man.
Used up.
He said he'd come in, you could see him. And evidently, his life had set his body in motion in the way he walked. He was. Just everything was calculated. And he'd chair back and just sort of get into a chair. And he said if he shook hands, he would go, look you right in the eye, so very glad to meet you. This was his motion. Amazing, amazing.
Now that's apparent.
Yeah, that's the one that's very successful. And that's the end product of that institution, the money making. That man couldn't fall down anywhere. Couldn't plop down. He couldn't raise his voice. He couldn't get excited. He couldn't argue with himself. Or probably never. If he drank, he probably drank just so much. He wouldn't get royally drunk sometime, or not drink it another time. Right down the line. And it was so funny because Gaines's parents came up to visit while the rich people were gone. And Gaines's father is a Southern Baptist minister. And Bill was there during that period of time. And you see, Gaines and Kathleen aren't married. Gaines's father is having difficulty not only resolving that problem, but resolving how come Gaines isn't gainfully employed. And why is he messing around with his art business? Trying to do paintings and all that kind of thing. And Gaines wouldn't drink a beer while his father was there. And Bill said, do you know what that's about? And I said, well, I sure do, because I had my father as a minister. That's exactly what that is. And he said, while they were there, we did an awful lot of going. And that was so funny to me, because that's exactly more or less the way it was when my father was alive. We you couldn't sit around and be a family. Things got too nervous. Because he's doing exactly what you were saying a minute ago about... You got an objective or trying to put something on somebody, some point of view. Well, you can't leave any time for a man to do that, see?
He's pushing a program.
Pushing the program, that's it.
Putting in Rancidas before us.
Yeah, you can't leave a man any time to do that. So, Bill said, they found a lot of places to go. Going here, going there. Occupy that time. You know, take the edge off of it.
Yeah, that'll do it. That's one thing that'll distract. That's a distraction for anything.
Yes.
That going places. I'm telling you, you get into that going mentality, and you're safe. No salvation or anything takes place during that going.
I had one of the funniest experiences when I was photographing Bulow Plantation. See, that was a right religious experience to me. That's a beautiful, that's a godly place, you might say, when there isn't anybody else there. And I was rather absorbed in it. And then here comes some of these goers, tourists. Mm-hmm. Well, Bulow Plantation is ruins. It's nothing there, it's ruins. And they're rather magnificent ruins in the front. And then there's a sign that says Old Cistern and Nature Trail. Well, that's about what it is. It is a path, and there's a dent in the ground. Well, the tourists had come, and they were worse than magpies and jaybirds having a fight. They come descend on the place, and they'd look around, and they'd be busy. They'd read the signs quick, you know, get all the sign information on those wooden signs with the scrolls on them. And then they'd look around and see those ruins, and then they'd see that sign. That's the first thing they saw. It says Nature Trail and Cistern. Well, off they'd go immediately. See, they'd spent all of 2 minutes reading the sign and about a half minute looking at the ruins. Really, I mean, they've got a 40-foot chimney there, and there's some things. It's an impressive thing when you stop and look at it a little bit. They'd take off down that trail, and I'd just watch them. And sure enough, about as long as it takes them to go down there and back, they were back, and they got in the car and left. And I used to just love it when they'd leave for that cistern, because I knew what they were going to see. Isn't it? That was the best piece of advertising. Took those people right down that grumpy trail and saw a hole in the ground, and they were going after something.
Disneyland will prosper. It will prosper.
It came to my mind at precisely that moment. I was going to say that they left there and went to where they could see something in Disneyland.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
And you can't say, well, I wish they hadn't put in an addition to that, because it's going to be inevitable. I mean, there's no way of getting out of it. Used to be Coney Island.
Mm-hmm. I reckon it is unavoidable. Because that's another thing Bill came up with. It's really, Bill's got a good mind. I think he's going to be able to work with it some, because he's putting these things together. He's been too flighty, see, to hold anything together pretty tight. He's had no objective in his head. He said, you know, all those people up there said, from Florida, said, you know what? We've been saving every dime we got so we can go to Disney World. He said, time and again. He's running to people. See, Bill and I went to Disney World together. So it's just not hearsay with me. I know what's there. I'm familiar with it.
Oh, yes.
You know, foreigners, that place was packed with people that have spent fortunes to come to America and they go to Disney World. There were whole troops of them, Guy. Great large segments of people from different countries around the world. Amazing.
It's, universal.
Yeah, saving every dime they got. Come down and see Disney World.
Oh, yeah.
And Beverly just went down there, talked about it a little bit, and it's the, they've got that shuttle system work, so the, when you go there, you can go somewhere, because they don't let you stop. See, you don't even have to worry about it. They sort of pick you up at the beginning, and then they just, you know, you're shuttled. Keeping in motion. There's always some other thing to do. Before you can figure out that you hadn't done anything, there's another thing to do. And then you're through with it. The day's over. And you've been there.
What kind of engineering do they call that?
I've forgotten. I had it written down here somewhere. It's a spinoff from golf. Yeah, I look at it as it's a necessary social virtue that the dollar bill has created that makes it socially acceptable to steal from others. That's right. I call it the big con artist game or something that the new exchange opened up. And if you'd done that back when you it was time to help your neighbor, you'd have probably gotten hung or something. But it turned around real quick that you could do it through this system.
Yes.
And still be respected.
Yes.
I get mad at you. but you did it. You know, I would go off grumping and come back next year. Get the same treatment, go off and grump. And there you are making money. You're conning me out of it.
But it's not grumple feeling now. Not with Disney World.
No, uh-uh. No, they figure that's dollar value.
Yeah. That's something you can't fight that. That's it's just like sin. It's embedded deep. And you see the people you have the most respect for, you'd think, well, maybe they won't be taken in.
Goddamn William Buckley in yesterday's paper. Did you read him? Ugh. He had to do it. He is exonerating Mr. Agnew. See, there it is. That's that social virtue. Necessary social virtue. He said it was a dastardly act that he pulled. But at the same time, he was a very fine politician. He meant a lot to this country, and he should be judged on being vice president from 68 to 73, and not from his dastardly acts. Why, most anybody does that, says Mr. Buckley. Yeah, I threw the paper down on the bathroom floor, and come to think of it, I better go pick it up and cut it up. That's a pretty good article. You never know when you get anything. You got to think back on it. I almost acted like Bob Sharp when he's reading Henry Coffer. Sitting back there tearing that page book apart page by page. Throwing it on the floor.
It's a shame people don't keep in touch, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, Bob Sharp. You'd just like to see how far down the hill he's gone. He might be president of the company, you never know. They have a change of heart. Everybody does.
Yeah.
But he was headed downhill when we knew him, wasn't he?
Woo. He, well, he was such a rabble rouser, he couldn't even work with Castro.
Castro's too, he's going for it. Huh?
He offered his services to the United States and they turned him down. I saw his letter. He, in all seriousness, wrote, God, I don't know whether it was the president or who, but it was some person of that nature offered himself. This is after he had been working for Castro. He's a wonder. That guy was a wonder. Yeah, the last word I heard of him, he was going down through South Florida and stopped to see one of our mutual friends, and he had married a much older woman with 5 children.
Well, if he did it by plan, deliberately, I can understand it. If he got hooked, that's another thing.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, if he did it by plan, he just doesn't know. Not everybody would appreciate how far along he got.
That's true.
Yeah. Already had his family.
At least get him out of the diaper stage. Hell, see, the last time I saw him, he had a 16-year-old girl. Or 15, and he was hell bent to whip her in line to be a proper wife.
Oh.
And that was programmed: get them young, raise them right.
Oh.
Now that's his twist. Yeah. He must have failed. He should have learned something from this barber girl you talk about that's so good with horses.
Now, you see, what I do, Wade, is so remote from anything that you have an experience with, that you see, like Bob Sharp. You see, out here, all I do is live around somebody else's experience who can report on it. For one thing, all these people you talk about are not going to live around anybody else's experience. They're going to face it direct, and they want it to be real. They're realistic. They want to face it direct. You see, that's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to face it direct. I'll face it through the others. Let them face it direct. They don't either, you see. It's a minor virtue, this facing anything direct, you see. And I think that's right. Well, and then you have the process, you see, of looking at it and making something of it. But now, you see, I don't try to use it and profit from other people's experience. There's no salvation. There's none of that to it. Well, there is in a way. The salvation side, though, would be entirely different. It would be just like the governess. See, it's the older governess examining what she did when she was young in Henry Jane Fairness School. That what it does, it enables me to look. I don't care about looking at myself. I haven't done anything. But it enables you to see what you do, and look at what other people do. It gives you the detachment,
But attachment's not what does it. It's you project. You see the function. I don't know what the mental powers are that make you neighbor.
Yeah, it's difficult to say what that whole process is.
And you see, you say, well, what I do, you see, is that's too quiet life. There's nothing quiet about it. It's a sort of violent life I lead, because I'm all the time, I've got to get in position and order to see what they do and hear them talk. And that is, you talk about figuring out what the land speculators are doing. You try that for a while.
You got to find the right tree to climb up, huh?
Yeah. So to speak. Yeah. And then hope they'll come
sit under it
tree.
And you don't fall out.
That's right. And well, a good part of the time, see, I fall out. I've got to be able to face that.
My truck driving days, even though I tried to look, I think of some of the people that I ran into, and I got recollection of them, but they're flat, and I know they're not flat people.
Yeah, you see, that's my trouble.
Is that there were a couple of them that were strong characters, you know, in their own right, that I didn't hang on to anything. I'm not talking about facts, but just a feeling.
I think the payoff would come if we could get somebody you knew and talk to them over a period of time. Not just you talk to them, but I talked to them a little bit too, you see. This sort of thing I do, I've done so much of it. Like Mr. Nealon, you had to hold him, you had to hit him on the head. You had to just knock him out before he shut up, so you could talk to him. And you see, in order to talk to him, I had to keep these other people in tow. And you see, these two flatheads out here that helped me at that time, Rick and Debbie. You see, they were always ready to carry the ball themselves, and they couldn't carry it. I went on the rounds one time with Rick, and I was going to stop him, John Palmer's, and I was going to walk up to him and let Rick just watch and see what happened. Well, what in the hell did he do? He beat me to it. He went up to talk to John Palmer and let me see what happened. And the only thing was, nothing happened. Now it'd be interesting. Take one of your person like your Fred and I never get to call his name. He's accessible, easy to get to. And we could sit here, you know, and talk to him.
Oh, Jack?
Jack Sanders. Yeah. And you get better results in the kitchen than you do outside. You say just move right out there and sit in the chair. Well, I can't work out there. It won't work. I don't know what it is. I just don't know. I don't care. But it won't work. And you can watch it happen. I can listen to you talk to her, and you can watch me talk to her, and you'll see what opens up. You'll see things open up. Things you never dreamed of will open up. That's the thing about it. In a way, now you see what I'm doing. I'm picking up that lead and going into something else. I'm taking that lead and going over into something else. You see, what would limit you is that you don't have a kitchen table. You see how I just transfer it?
Mm-hmm.
You've got people where one hand is tied behind you, and sometimes both hands. Like the little girl who said it wasn't 60 pounds, just 30. Well, you haven't chosen favorable ground. And there again, you see, is part of the thing that's not visible out here. Now, see, on Sunday, little Bessie came up here, and she spent the afternoon. She was prepared to. She's the one who was down here while Miss Bessie was dying, and Debbie is the one who got in touch with her. But I helped Debbie, and I explained to her some of the things that happened. She wouldn't come up here because she knew that I had a tape, and she wasn't going to be taken in. I didn't care where she came or not, and I didn't care about talking to her, except down there. But as Debbie got into it, she got some remarkable things, but she didn't see them. I saw them. For one thing, that is a huge element of roughness. She fell and on her knee, and it was on the edge of concrete. And it just, she thought it nicked the kneecap, and the doctor told her it just busted it. And you see, it's been painful ever since, and she sort of has learned to live on painkillers. It's had much, and she's a huge woman, I'm telling you, and she wears a girdle. Full of links, so she goes around in an envelope. She's that big. Well, otherwise she just flow in her clothes. But she's huge. She's huge. And she has lived with roughness. Sometimes when you see her, you see you get the idea that she's sweet and takes care of the children. Well, she does that, and she can do that. But she is still basically rough, and if you make a picture for her and it don't suit her, she'll be right there, and there'll be absolutely no way you can get away from that squirming of hers. She's a master of it. And she's got me down there where I couldn't wiggle. I kept cussing her, you see. I knew her, but I at the same time she had me. She had the upper hand, and there wasn't anything I could do about it. Well, she finally came up here, and she sat way over there. She sat as far away from the table as she could. She sat here 2-3 hours, solid talk. It wasn't nearly as interesting as some of the things down there. But you get those glimpses. Now that's what you get inside if you can choose your ground. And you see, if you could somehow, well, you don't want to change too much. That's what I found. Anytime you get a little light, you see, it'll affect you. You'll try to use it, but you don't want to use too much of it. Just do it little by little, so it won't, you know,
mm-hmm.
won't change anything that you've been doing.
Yeah, I think over the long term, there'd have been some modest, interesting stuff coming out of Bill last night. The whole thing wasn't worth working up on tape, I don't believe. Could have been. I mean, listen.